up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about testing out and finding small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. If you're interested in reaching out or helping out, check out the links in the description of each episode to access our email, Twitter, website, and YouTube channel. But enough about the show, let's get into our next game. Withering Rooms is the game for this week's episode. Withering Rooms is a 2.5D survival horror RPG. And some comparable games that we've talked about before, this is very similar to Lamentum and Darkwood, as well as Resident Evil 2 and 4. The game was originally released in April of 2024 on PC, PS5, Xbox Series X and S, although there was early access on Steam all the way back from October of 2022. The game was developed by Moonless Formless, which is a Seattle studio which was established in 2022, small team out in Seattle. And the game was published by Perp Games, at least the 2024 release, so I think they self-published on Early Access for Steam. But Perp Games is a publisher out of London, and they do a lot of small games. One that I took note of was Death or Treat. I think I might own that, or at least it's on my wish list. But they also do a lot of VR games. The game had a physical release in May of 2024 on PS5 only, and it was just a standard edition, so just the game in the box. I'm not sure where exactly this is available. I'm really only seeing it on Play Asia, so I don't know if it's exclusive to that, but I can't seem to find it at major retailers, but eventually it might be available on like Amazon. The game released with an MSRP of $24.99, and I believe that physical edition is available for $34.99, at least from Play Asia. Runtime of the game, so if you're just kind of running through the story, not really lingering a lot, you could probably get through this in about 15 hours, maybe a little more. But if you're being thorough, which I certainly am, and you're collecting a lot, you're exploring a lot, you're doing a lot of side stuff, it could put you well over like 40 hours. So there's definitely a lot of content in this game. And for our PlayStation listeners, this game does have a platinum trophy. It seems a little tough. There are a bunch of endings, I think like four or five different ways to end the game. So it might require multiple playthroughs for that. Me, I've been playing this on PS5, also splitting time on the PlayStation Portal. But I got this on sale for $17.49. And I've put in over 20 hours at this point. There are four chapters in the game. I think I'm just getting to the fourth chapter, but I'm really thorough. I'm really taking my time, similar to a game like Darkwood, where it's like, you know, I could easily progress or just move on, but I really like kind of resource managing and taking my time and being thorough. In terms of recommendation, I saw this on Twitter. I don't know how I got exposed to it. I don't know if it was like part of an indie dev tag or something like that, or somebody shared it, but it seemed interesting when I first saw it. It didn't really stand out that much, but then once I actually got it and jumped in, really the lore and the world just kind of took me away, and so I was really excited and kept playing. Let's talk gameplay for Withering Rooms. And let's get into the basics. So this is a 2D game in terms of your movement. What's interesting is that there's no platforming here. There's no like jumping or getting higher. You're just kind of walking back and forth on the same plane. So you're going to be walking your character on one level, like to the left or to the right. And really how it's going to function is you're going to be walking in and between rooms, hence Withering Rooms. But once you get to the end of a room on the left or the right, there'll probably be a door or a doorway. And if you walk through it, you go into the next room. But there's also doors along sort of the background. So for example, if you find yourself in like a long hallway, there'll be rooms that are kind of perpendicular. And then so if you come across their doorway, you would go into the screen and then you go into that room. So really you're just moving left to right, but you may go up or down depending on which way you're going through. But that's pretty much all you're going to be doing in terms of movement. And while you're moving around, you're going to be interacting with things. So obviously, like I said, there will be doors and doorways. So if you come to a door and it's closed, you can interact with it to open it. But of course, if there's no door, you would just walk through the doorway if you just punch up the direction. What is really interesting and very helpful in this game is there is a peek function where if you get to a door or a doorway, you can see the prompts for opening the door, but you can also see a prompt for peeking through. And what you can do is it'll kind of move the screen to in that room and it'll show you a little bit of the room, like if there's anybody in front of the door, what the name of the room is, and things will populate on the map. This is really valuable for assessing the layout of a room, if it's safe in that room, if there are enemies in that room. So this is a function that you're going to use a lot. And as you're passing through these different rooms, like I said, you're going to be walking kind of side to side, and there might be objects or furniture kind of in the background. And one thing you're going to be doing is when you pass over certain furniture, you'll see a prompt to search. And this is what you're going to be doing a lot. So whenever you see that prompt, you hit search, and this is where you're going to collect a lot of things. You're going to retrieve a lot of currency, different consumables, crafting materials, things like that. Something else you'll be able to do when you come across these pieces of furniture is you'll see a prompt to hide. So for example, if you get to a bed, you can hide under the bed, you can hide under the table. There'll be like closets where if you open them up and then you hide and then you close it, you can actually hide in a dresser or something like that. So if enemies are kind of passing by, you can hide in there and then they can kind of move along and then you can keep going. You might come across a bookcase and it'll say, read this book, and then you'll get sort of like a note entry into your journal. And then there'll be kind of a general interact depending on the context. It might be examine this or open this or do something like that. So those prompts are going to constantly show up, as well as talk when you get to NPCs or vendors, so you can interact with them. And then as you're moving around, one thing that is pretty major in this game, and I know I said something similar in Lamentum, there is a button you can hold to run, and this is going to help you so much, whether you're running away from enemies or whether you're just kind of traversing and backtracking, and you don't have stamina, so you can run for an infinite amount of time. So that's really good. And traversing is really made pretty easy and nice. And you can also dodge roll, and we'll talk more about that when we get to combat, but you can kind of just roll through enemies, so that's really helpful. So let's start to get into some of the advanced things. So the big things are going to be items and weapons, a lot of the things that you're going to be picking up and finding. And so when you have these things in your inventory, you can go to your inventory and you can equip them. The majority of these things are going to be equipped in your right hand, but we will talk about left hand equip things. But the things you're going to equip are going to be things like weapons, throwables, spell scrolls that you cast. So what you'll do is you'll equip them and then you'll have them in your hand. And then when you hit square on PlayStation, you will use it. So that will have you swing or shoot the weapon, whatever it is. It'll have you throw the consumable, or it'll have you cast the spell that's in your hand. If you get consumables, this is interesting because if you go to the menu and you click on the consumable and you come out of the menu, it'll automatically use it. So if it's a health item, you automatically use it. Or if it's something called a warding candle, like you'll put it down. So any kind of consumable that is meant to like buff you or improve your health or something like that, it'll automatically get used when you select it. And then you will kind of go back to whatever item you had previously had equipped. The left hand is interesting. So you'll get items that will specifically be labeled left hand equip. and nothing really too surprising here. So this will be things like a shield or a lamp. There are a lot of different things that are left hand and very unique things. I'm not going to spoil anything, but the main thing is going to be like a shield or a lamp to kind of illuminate your way. And then you'll have a button to use that left hand. So on PlayStation, it'll be L2. And if you're holding a shield, it'll be to hold it up and block. If it's a lamp, it'll be to turn it on and off, as well as activate any of the other specific left hand equip items. Now, going in and out of the menu to equip these different things sounds cumbersome, and it is. And so the game has kind of like a quick slot wheel that I think has like 8 to 10 spaces. You can assign any item to this, but what's really nice is there are 3 consecutive like wheels that you can populate. So it's somewhere between like 25 and 30 different items you can have on your quick wheel slot. So this is really nice because if you're swapping in and out of like a melee weapon or a spell or something like that, and you will do this in real time, it's very helpful because you don't have to go searching for it. And what's also really nice is whether you're pausing it to look at the inventory or whether you're looking at your quick slot wheels, the game will pause for you. So you don't have to worry about like, you know, it going in slow motion. You have to hurry up and choose an item. You can really take your time, especially when it comes to combat, kind of swapping between weapons or items or consumables. So let's talk about your character. So you will have stats, and you'll be able to go to the screen of your character and see these stats at any time. And you'll have basic things like your max health, your poise stat, which is basically how easily you get interrupted if you're doing something and someone attacks you. Your speed, I think it's like how fast you run, but I also think it's like how fast you would swing certain melee weapons. You'll have a base damage percentage of things like melee attack, of spell damage, of projectiles, and this is subject to change with different things that you can equip to improve this. So you might get plus 10% to melee damage or something like that. Your character will have resistance numbers or tolerance numbers for different stats or status effects. I don't know the difference between resistance and tolerance. The game kind of uses these interchangeably at times, and I'm not sure how they differentiate. But you're going to have resistance stats to these different status effects. The main one is going to be something called Curse, and that will have a lot of implications, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But also things like Bleed, Poison, Paralysis. Each of these will have like a meter when you start to accrue it, and then when it maxes out, they'll have varied effects once you max accumulate it. Most of them are going to be that you just take constant damage, like Bleed and Poison are pretty self-explanatory. Curse definitely has a lot of other implications, but when you max out on Curse, you'll get something called Curse Rot, and that'll affect different things as well, but you also take constant damage. Paralysis kind of sucks, because if that meter goes all the way up, then you are kind of standing still for, I don't know, maybe like 5 seconds or so, and you can really get beat up on. Your character can level up, and these level ups are going to be available in spurts. Like, you'll be able to get access to 5 or 10 levels at a time, and then it's kind of gated. It's really interesting because how you level up is kind of varied in terms of who's dispensing those levels. So sometimes it's an NPC, sometimes it's a machine, and these are also going to be kind of story gated based on your progression. It could be a quest that you have to complete in order to get access to the next level up dispenser, or it could be something like you have to find a particular upgrade item. At least that's how it works later in the game. And once you get access to a way to level up, it's not just like you automatically get levels up. Each level is going to cost you a particular amount of the currency, as well as a certain number of a specific crafting material. And then in sequence, those values will kind of go up. And leveling up, you're going to improve different attributes. Basically, they're just specific words that are linked to one or multiple of your stats. So for example, if you improve like immunity, that'll give you +5 to bleed, poison, and paralysis resistance. Or if you improve something like dexterity, like that'll improve the percentage of throwable or projectile damage. And then you have basic ones like one will just improve your health by 10, one will just improve your curse resistance or tolerance by 10 or something like that. So in the level up screen, it's actually very informative. So you don't have to go guessing because all of your stats are right there. And then when you choose a particular one, it'll tell you exactly what it's going to level up. armor and rings are going to be a big thing in this game. So you're going to be able to equip a bunch of these things that'll improve your stats, whether it's like tolerance for certain things, or it could be specific damage for specific types of weapons or melee weapons or spells or something like that. At any time, you're able to equip one armor set, one piece of headwear, four rings, and one amulet. Pretty much all armor or headwear has some aspect that reduces physical damage, but depending on how heavy it is, it might also reduce your speed. You could increase your max health percentage, your curse tolerance, different sort of attack percentages up. And this is going to be a big thing when it comes to your build that you choose to do and sort of the synergy of all of your equipped items or the weapons that you have. What I really like is that your armor and rings can be kind of recorded into customizable loadouts because of the different builds that you can do, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, and all of the varied equipment that you can get. You're going to have access to customizable loadouts, and this is really interesting. Basically, what it is it's an item that you find. Essentially, what it does is each of these items will record exactly what you're wearing, your headwear, your armor, your rings, and your amulet, as kind of like a quick loadout to swap between. And you can have multiple of these at one time. Like, I have 5 of these items that I found. And basically what it does is you assign whatever you're wearing, all of the rings, and it records it. And then instead of like, oh, I'm going to switch to a melee build, let me unequip all these rings and find that armor that is good for that, it'll basically just allow you to quickly swap between your equipped builds. So I really like this. This makes it very accessible, especially because you're going to come across a lot of different enemies or bosses that might not go well with the current equip load that you have, depending on like the damage that they do or what they're vulnerable to. Let's get into the economy of this game. So like I said, a lot of what you're going to be doing as you're walking through rooms is collecting. You're going to constantly be searching things and collecting all kinds of crafting material, all kinds of currency, health items. But you're also going to be able to buy and sell things. So you're going to find various vendors throughout the game, and they're going to have different crafting materials, different made items, different health items, maybe even weapons. Some of these vendors are going to specialize, like maybe one of them is only going to give you access to this rare item or this weapon or this type of crafting material. And also some of them are not going to buy things back from you. There might only be a few of them that you can sell things to. There's a little bit of gatekeeping here with the vendors in the economy, specifically with particular crafting items. Like, for example, whenever you want to craft a spell, you need a blank scroll and you need certain colored waxes. At a certain point, if you have like a certain amount of them, they'll sell out from that particular vendor. Even if you like craft different spells with it and don't have the material anymore, like the game kind of recognizes like, okay, you have more than enough of that spell or that wax color. We're not going to let you buy more. I got a little frustrated with this at times, but I understand that the game doesn't want you to just like completely have an infinite number of particular spells. They're really trying to ration the materials that you have at a particular time, and that's fine. But what's interesting is that even though like different vendors might be out of stock of certain things, you can always go elsewhere and like find rooms that still have enemies or still have places to search. And so you can still find those crafting materials, but you, I guess, can't kind of like pay your way to just max out different things. And of course, with getting a lot of crafting materials, you're going to be crafting a lot of things. Things that you can craft are different consumables for health. It can be throwing jars, which are going to be a big thing in terms of trying to damage enemies in different ways. And of course, spells. So these are going to be sort of the three main ways that you're crafting or things that you're crafting. And it's a little gated in terms of being able to access these different types of tables where you can craft these things. So you'll get this in time with story quests. And also you'll be able to improve, like get different tiers of being able to craft like jars or spells. So it is paced in a way where you're not getting the most powerful things right away. You do kind of get access to things as you go through the different quests. Combat and exploration is a major part of what you're going to be doing. It's kind of the bread and butter. So with combat, there are a fair amount of enemies throughout this game. And the size of the room typically is going to dictate, like, if you have a long hallway, there's probably going to be multiple enemies throughout that hallway. But if you have a small room, there might be one, there might be two. But you're not going to have too many, like, overcrowded, like, mobs of enemies coming at you. And what the enemies can do are also going to vary. So you're going to have enemies that are coming up to you to try and melee attack you. Some of them are going to have different projectile ways of attacking you. Some of them are going to be really fast. Some of them are going to be kind of fat and slow. And some of them are going to do like AoE attacks that'll do status effects on you. But then you'll see more advanced things, like you'll see different monsters or beasts that can do multiple things. You'll see spell casters that are like humanoids that can do things that you can do, or that can do things that you can't do yet but eventually will be able to do. Again, that peak feature is going to be a major thing that you should be using. So if you're out like exploring, finding a new room, peeking into a room is going to be important because it's going to allow you to see what kind of enemies are in there, if there are any enemies in there. Some enemies are going to be like hidden in the scenery, not that discreetly, but if you come across like a bed or something like that and you hear someone writhing, if you get closer, like they'll come out of the bed and then they'll come after you. But for the most part, you're going to see enemies on patrol back and forth in the room. So when you're peeking in, if you wait long enough, you can see them walking across and then you'll know someone's in there. And if you start to engage with an enemy, if you aggro them, if they see you, they will chase you for the most part. And what's interesting is they will chase you through a door into another room. So you don't want to just leave a room and be like, oh, okay, I'm safe now. A lot of them will follow you. Some enemies won't, whether it's because they can't fit through the door or whether it's because like they're just not runners. But I would always at first be very wary of when you run into another room, just to kind of be ready for an enemy to pop through the door and just start attacking you. And the combat and the attack pace are interesting and they can vary. It really involves you learning the enemy types, like I said, whether they're fast or slow, whether they do projectiles, whether they're tanky. Some of them will hold shields, so you really need to kind of learn different enemies and how best to dispose of them. And your strategy might be varied depending on how comfortable you are with your play skills. A lot of what you might do is kind of run and snipe if you have a slow enemy. So run back a little bit and then snipe a bunch of times with a projectile attack. Or you might do a lot of melee attacks and then roll through when the enemy attacks you. It can be a little tough back and forth rolling through, and enemies will start to prepare themselves if you're going to roll through, and then they might have attacks that hit on both sides. And I will say that many different tactics can work. There are bosses in this game and they can be tough, especially when it comes to if they're fast moving. There's one boss in particular where I had to constantly be going to the quick menu to swap between a health item and then hurry up and use it. Okay, now I'm going to cast this spell. It can be a tough challenge, but I think everything is open to you trying your playstyle. And if that doesn't work, you have a lot of different items or projectiles or consumables that can kind of help you in different ways. But a lot of this combat and exploration is going to result in you clearing out rooms. That's going to be sort of the main thing that you're going to want to do, especially because when you kill enemies, they will stay dead. And so you can kind of backtrack and go through different rooms and not have to worry about new enemies appearing. What's also helpful as you're exploring is that the map will have different icons for what is in particular rooms, specifically if there are different crafting tables, if there are NPCs, and there will be a question mark in a room on a map if there are still places that you haven't searched in that room, as well as icons for if there's a fast travel location or if the room itself is a safe room, meaning you don't have to worry about enemies being in there. The pacing in this game is pretty straightforward. It's quest-based. And you'll definitely have multiple quests kind of active at the same time that you have to complete in order to progress or go further. And you're gonna kind of get put into like a gated sandbox of a certain number of rooms or a specific area that you can explore. And then you won't be able to go past certain areas because of quest implications. Fast travel is nice. It comes fairly early. In fact, one of your quests pretty early on is to find out where this fast travel location is. A lot of what you're going to be doing besides fighting enemies and exploring is going to be solving puzzles. And it could be based on items that you have. It could be based on things in a room. A lot of your main quests are going to involve solving puzzles, but some of them are going to be optional. There will be other quests or things that aren't even quests that are optional. Some of this is going to be like find numbers for a safe in a room, and this could be somewhere in the lore. It could be somewhere in the environment. It could involve augmenting the environment, which leads into the curse mechanic, which is very interesting because the more cursed you get, the more the environment kind of changes a little bit. But a lot of your individual pacing is going to be involving getting comfortable, which is clearing out spaces, getting a lot of crafting materials, and then collecting things and kind of bolstering up your arsenal. The game is played in chapters. There are 4 chapters, and each time you go into a new chapter, it'll be like a new area sometimes. Sometimes it'll reset the same area, but you'll have access to more things in that area, more rooms, more spaces. Some quests will go across chapters. This was something that was a little frustrating for me because I wasn't sure. I didn't want to progress into another chapter before I solved all the quests, but I found out by looking online that some of these quests will go across chapters. When you enter a new chapter, all of the rooms and the enemies will reset, and the map will pretty much get completely erased, except for the rooms that you've established fast travel locations. This is a little odd to me. I understand the rooms resetting and enemies coming back, but I was a little frustrated because the map like completely wipes, and then you just have these isolated rooms for wherever the fast travel locations are. This irked me because I knew I was in a new chapter, but I wanted to go back to a certain place, and I couldn't remember how to access that place or from what fast travel location to go in order to get there. I think this was intentional, but I found it a little frustrating because I had to like open up exploration and get a new map for where all these different rooms were. Sometimes rooms were in different locations, but for the most part, the places that I wanted to go were in the same spot. I just had to reestablish on the map how to get there. Dying in this game is a little similar because when you die, the map will also reset and keep your fast travel locations and the enemies will reset. But something else happens when you die. You will lose all of your items. Now, there are some exceptions here, so don't think that, you know, the game is completely over when you die. You will collect items that are permanent items, so pretty much all the keys that you find, all of the different armor that you find, different quest items, they will automatically be labeled as permanent. However, there's another mechanic in this game for whenever you die, and that is the remembrance mechanic. So throughout this game, you're going to find these remembrance shrines. You have to access them by giving a certain crafting material. What it'll do is it'll add one slot to your remembrance. When you have a certain number of remembrance slots, you get to assign particular items that you have. If you die, these items you will remember or keep them. You can also find these remembrance tiers throughout the game where you will automatically add one to that total. So for example, I'm about halfway through the 4th chapter right now. I have 30 different remembrance items. And so I can constantly swap between what I want to remember and what I don't want to remember. So there's a lot of strategy here. Probably in the early goings, you'll want to remember like the weapon that you like and like healing items that you have. But for the most part, later in the game, I was remembering a lot of different rings and amulets and items that I would use in combat, whereas the things I could craft, I kind of just let go because I can craft them. I can easily find more materials. So depending on where you are in the game and what your priorities are, that's going to change. I can understand the frustration with this mechanic being a little annoying, but I will say, and we can kind of transition into accessibility here, I only died about 2 to 3 times. So it might happen to you while you're playing. You might die and you might lose your items. But again, you're doing a lot of exploration. You're searching a lot of things. You're picking up and collecting a lot of crafting material, a lot of items. So you don't kind of miss it that much. Like when you die, you're just right back on the horse and you're finding a lot of things right away. But because of assigning quick menu slots with health items, you know, if you're about to die, like you can easily eat a health item and regain that health. Or run out of a room or things like that. There are some remedies for dying. For example, in some of the boss rooms, there's something called a rebirth shrine, which is like a candle that has a mirror behind it. And if you light that candle, it'll kind of save exactly who you are. And if you happen to die in that room, it'll reset to that point in time. But if you leave the room, the candle will go out. So you'll often see these at the beginning of boss rooms. So these are really helpful, especially because a lot of these bosses are tough, like I said. So this is a mechanic where if you die, you won't completely lose everything. You'll just come back to right there. Other accessibility features, when you get to the end of the chapter, it'll warn you before you talk to somebody, like, hey, don't talk to this person unless you're ready to end the chapter. So that's a nice kind of heads up there. Again, the map detail, what's in particular rooms, what NPCs are in those rooms, that's all detailed for you. There is a quest book that gives a little bit of information in terms of what you need to do. There's also a lot of collecting of notes and things like that that you've read and books. That can also be helpful to peruse. But also what's really nice is the website for this game has an FAQ that's kind of acting like a walkthrough for different quests. And so I use this a bunch. It is spoiler friendly, but a lot of them will have solution tabs that you can open up. I liked using this. I found that there wasn't really a lot out there in terms of walkthroughs for this game. So I found this really helpful because a lot of games like this, I know something similar went on in Lamentum as I was trying to go for that platinum trophy. I could not find anywhere really to read a walkthrough. So it's really nice that the developer actually made this on their website. And so I found that very helpful. And I think that if you're struggling, you might also find help in that too. Let's talk about the vibe of Withering Rooms. I love everything going on in the vibe in this game. So let's start with the setting and the lore and the different themes. So in a lot of ways, this reminds me of a combination of like Lamentum and Black Book, because you've got like the horror aspect of Lamentum, but then you've got this witchcraft aspect with Black Book. But in terms of setting, you're in the late 1800s, you're in this mansion, as well as the grounds around the mansion. But this mansion is kind of like an asylum, and you're a patient there. But when you're walking through a lot of the scenery, what you see is going to be pretty much of the times. Like you'll walk through a kitchen, an infirmary, a study, a parlor, a banquet hall, and it's all kind of a period piece or what you would expect at that time in a mansion. But then there's this supernatural force of what's going on. So the mansion will reset each night, which is essentially every time you die. And patients will reawaken. So if you happen to die, you're going to reawaken in a different bedroom. You're also going to learn the history of the mansion, which is the Mostyn House. And you'll get clippings of newspapers and read diary pages and notes and letters from people about certain things that are going on in the history of this and how it's affecting the current status of where you are. Reading collectibles is going to be a big deal in this. They are fairly short, and I like that, but they paint a nice picture very well and very succinctly. You're going to find a lot of NPCs, and you can talk to them and get info from them if you want it. And the enemies are also going to kind of paint a little bit of what's going on. Like I said, this is supposed to be some kind of asylum. You're going to find a lot of disturbed patients, and you're going to find like a lot of splicer like junkies or like demented nurses or things like that. But then as the game progresses, they're going to get worse and more crazy, like animalistic monstrosities all of a sudden. Or, you know, eventually you're going to get ghosts. And this is where the supernatural kind of goes crazy, because a lot of your quests or a lot of the enemies might involve things like spirits, or you're going to find a seance room. There's going to be a lot of witches that are NPCs, witches that are enemies. So there's going to be a lot of magic going on. You're going to be able to cast an enchant spell, and if there's a suit of armor near you, you'll enchant it and you'll be able to use it as kind of like a helper with combat. There's going to be different mansion politics with different factions, whether it's the witches or whether it's the wretches or whoever. And some of your quests will actually have choices of what to do with particular NPCs. One of the big things in this game is the curse mechanic. And we talked about how you have a curse tolerance or resistance or whatnot. And then you're going to have a meter. Everything that you do is pretty much going to affect this. If you cast spells, you're going to get cursed a little bit. If you get too much, you're going to get curse rot. But what's really interesting is this status effect is a mechanic in the game. game for seeing different things, because in order to see certain things, you need to have a certain amount of curse level in order for it to be revealed to you. So this is very similar to the insight mechanic in Bloodborne, where if you have a certain number of insight, you're able to see certain things. Well, this is going to be a little more active because this is going to allow you to progress certain quests or see different illusions dispelled or things like that. So I love this. I love how it's portrayed visually, and we'll talk about that. But just as a mechanic, like something that can hurt you, you know, your instinct is that this thing is bad, but you can also find that like having it is good, and different rings and armor will also kind of synergize with this. You can have different builds that live at high curse percentages. This will also bleed into themes of like dreams or nightmares versus reality. There's a lot of like Poltergeist here, the movie series, or Inception, or even a little bit of H.H. Holmes. So there's a lot of different things that get pulled here, and I love how they're webbed together. Again, I'm not trying to spoil too much, but I just love how all of these things are incorporated into this kind of succinct story of what the heck is going on here. The visuals in this game, so like we said, it is a 2.5D, so you are having these real looking models, like these 3D models. Of course, you're walking in 2D planes, but these look like pretty much real character models like you would see in a modern game. A lot of the eyes on these characters are kind of dead, but it reminds me a lot of, you know, games like Bloodborne. The characters are pretty simple. You're not seeing like detail in their skin or anything like that. In terms of colors and backgrounds and darkness, a lot of it is going to be of the time. So you're going to see a lot of classic wood or Victorian furniture, especially the things that you're searching. The architecture, you're going to have rooms with pillars or marble floors, a lot of rugs in the hallways. Sometimes there'll be like wood plank floors. You'll see paintings on the wall. You'll see kind of alcoves in some of these hallways of like little sitting nooks. There is a lot of detail, but what I like is that you have a fixed camera that kind of comes back from afar. So again, you're not worried about zooming in on like, can I see their pores or anything like that? But you see plenty of detail from where you are. Lighting is a big thing, so you're going to have areas that have dimmer lighting, as well as some areas that are just complete darkness. So when you go to places like the basement or the attic or different tunnels, it might have fainter lighting. You will have areas that are like complete darkness, and so you will have to potentially hold a lamp in your left hand, or there is a torch weapon that can go in your right hand, or your character can actually have inner light. Certain rings can add to the inner light of the character if they're walking, like they're just illuminating a little light kind of in a circle. So all these things are going to help you to see. The costumes in this game, again, of the time, the different armors that you're going to have to equip, it could be dresses or robes. You're going to get a nurse outfit, a soldier outfit, different hats. Enemies are going to be at times very dirty and grotesque. Like it could be those, you know, former patients or crazed nurses, but you're going to see a lot of soiled or bloody clothing, or even their skin kind of having flakes or looking like they're infected. Some are going to be very tall. Some are going to be hunched over. Some will be crawling on the floor. Some will be crawling on the ceiling. Some are going to be ghosts, and they're going to be a little transparent. The biggest visual thing is the curse effect. We talked about the curse effect being a status thing, but also a visual thing or a mechanic for going to certain places or dispelling illusions. But anytime your curse meter starts to go up, your surroundings are going to change. And depending on the percentage, it might go at a slower pace if you're accruing curse at a slower pace. But if you're accruing curse at a larger pace, like things are going to happen more quickly. When it's happening at a slower pace, it's so intentional and so meticulous. One of the first things that you're going to see is that the screen will start to skip a little bit, or you'll start to see like a watermark on the screen or something like that, almost like you're looking at a movie reel. And so it's like kind of distorting your reality as you're watching the game. But then you'll see like some of the walls will slowly start to stain or age, or the paint will like look like it's a lot dirtier. Then you'll start to see more drastic changes, like the floor will become like this metal grate, or potentially have like blood kind of flowing like a river on the floor. Some of the furniture will start to get replaced, like you might see a desk and it'll float up, and then you'll see like this pipe or this hanging body that's really dirty or disgusting. You might see a different character that kind of pops in on the sides, almost like Mortal Kombat, the one that says Toasty. You'll see this character just pop in, and it just comes in so quickly, and it's just like this laughing girl, and it freaks you out every time. Different enemies actually pop in, and this is actually one of the ways that you can find newer enemies is by having your curse be very high in certain rooms, and eventually you might see it start to rain blood in whatever room. This is something that is so incredible, and it happens at such a gradual pace, but it's very effective. It really just adds to the horror vibe. It really creeps you out, and I love the seamless transition. And in terms of audio, sound effects are a big thing in this game. Enemies making noise, doing kind of like this chatter, whether they're going crazy or something like that. It's very helpful. It's very Bloodborne. Like when you hear an enemy kind of talking, you know that they're around, and it's nice to kind of listen to their banter or like what exactly they're saying that might actually just be nonsense. Music in this game is great. It's just simple piano. Sometimes it's strings, and it has this sort of chilling effect where it's like just piano going on. It's kind of quaint, but it's very matter-of-factly, and it's a nice counterpart to some of the horrors of the situation that you feel. But I love the vibe that it creates. It's kind of like this somewhat like a night sky astral horror type thing, but like there's a certain amount of class, and I think that has to do with the period and the setting. And you'll actually see pianos throughout this game, and sometimes you actually see a ghost like playing the piano, so that's something that's interesting, and it just adds to whatever the room you're in and what's going on. Let's wrap up the conversation about Withering Rooms. So there is so much in this game. There's so much complexity, and yet it's so simple in terms of understanding and its approach. I was entranced by this game, and I still am. I'm almost finished it. But I love survival horror games. I love resource management, ammo management, all that type of stuff. I really took my time clearing things out, sort of maxing out crafting materials and things like that. I love the idea that you can have different builds and a wide variety of weapons to choose from and throwables and different armor and rings to kind of help you, as well as the quick slots for easily changing things. Some of the bosses in this game are tough. I got to one of them, it really required me changing my playstyle, so I wasn't a fan of that, but I understand that some of them kind of get you out of your comfort zone. I think the game is forgiving when it comes to dying, especially with bosses, but even losing items and the whole remembrance mechanic, I think that might off-put some people, especially if you're a rookie to this genre, although that's kind of like a Souls-like thing. But if you're someone that's more a veteran of this, it might not be as big of an issue. Some of the questing and the optional content can be a little confusing. There are a lot of things that don't have a quest. There are a lot of secrets in this game, and I like that. But the idea of like not sure if this quest will cancel if I go to the next chapter, or whether it goes across chapters, and I have to look that up like on the website, it was a little confusing, and I didn't really get clarification with that. That might frustrate some of you that are completionists or trophy hunters, but the lore and the setting is so good. The Victorian, the witchcraft, the astral kind of horror, and the piano playing, it just really adds so much into it that got me through this game. I mean, I loved the survival horror aspect, but I was not expecting the lore and the setting to really capture me the way that it did. In terms of value, I think $25 for an MSRP is spot on for the amount of content in this game. There's so much depth, there's so many secrets, optional things that you can do. There's a new game plus aspect where there's more content. I haven't gotten to that yet, but $25 I think is great for this game. Any sale I think is a steal for this. I got it for $17. I think that's a steal for the amount of content. If you like this genre, survival horror, I think you'll eat this game up. Certainly the setting and the lore. If you're someone who's interested in this type of setting or this type of horror, witchcraft and late 1800s and Victorian mansions and stuff like that, I think that you will get a lot out of this game. And so I highly, highly recommend that pretty much anyone play this game. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.